Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey. It is Sunday at 1 o'clock, and that means you've tuned in to Eat Your Words, brought to you live from the back of Roberta's Pizza on the Heritage Radio Network. It is a sunny day here in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, and you might be wondering what's up, because the voice coming to you through your radio dial is not that of Kathy Irway, the weekly host of Eat Your Words. We're turning the tables on Kathy today. My name is Erin Fairbanks. I am host of The Farm Report and executive director of Heritage Radio Network. And today we're going to be interviewing Kathy, who is joining us in studio as our guest to talk about her new amazing book, The Food of Taiwan. Welcome to the studio.
It's so thrilling to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Applause. So Kathy, I have to say this is probably the only cookbook I have ever read, and maybe possibly the only cookbook in the history of the world, that opens with a description of an assassination attempt.
Yeah. Okay. So, The Food of Taiwan is not all about this assassination attempt, but you know, I had a really pivotal semester abroad in Taipei, and it was during a very pivotal time in its history. The Democratic Progressive Party's president was campaigning for his second tenure, and just the day before the elections were to take place, he was shot. Not life-threateningly. It was like more like a graze. And but anyway, so this he went on to win. He was fine. It was such an interesting turning point in the history of Taiwan, because you see, you know, the Democratic Progressive Party really animating the culture of Taiwan, and people were standing up and saying that, you know, they're Taiwanese, and which is the DPP's message, you know, claiming that heritage and being proud of that culture, which was different, you know, from the time before, and it's actually grown immensely since that time.
Yeah, well, and I think it's like interesting as a reader of cookbooks, because you kind of immediately are throwing the gauntlet down and saying to us, you know, really announcing this is not going to be your mama's cookbook. and one of the things I really love kind of making my way through the book is how kind of thoughtfully you've interwoven both, you know, the history of the people of Taiwan, but also your own kind of personal narrative into this book. And so I know, because we are on your show, that your listeners are probably somewhat familiar with your background. I mean, obviously, the book, The Art of Eating In, How I Learned to Stop Spending and Love the Stove, longtime theme of the show.
Yeah.
But your second book, focusing specifically on Taiwan, why?
You know, when we talk about home cooking, we think of our comfort foods. And, you know, growing up, my mom would cook often Taiwanese-inspired dishes because she was born and raised in Taiwan. So, you know, when I talk about getting back to your roots and, like, getting into the hang of cooking, a lot of people find that it's really comforting to cling to some of their favorite comfort foods and that nostalgia. So I think that, you know, exploring my own favorite comfort foods just led me to, you know, this wonderful exploration of where it came from. So that's why, and also, you know, I haven't seen a cookbook about Taiwanese food with or without an assassination attempt beginning.
Well, that was the other thing I think is really, you know, the another way the book is kind of striking new ground is this idea of Taiwanese cooking being distinct from other regions of China. And can you maybe, for folks who are less familiar with the kind of like physical geographic history mm-hmm. of Taiwan, give us a sense of where it sits in relation to China and kind of so we can get a picture sure. in our head.
So Taiwan is like just off the southeast coast, very, very close to Fujian province. But it's very separate in a way, too. It had an aboriginal tribes for thousands of years that had nothing to do with the Chinese Empire until, you know, relatively modern times. Also, you have Japan right to the north. The Japanese archipelago sort of trickles down. And for a time, it was sort of debated, like, if Taiwan is part or not. But anyway, that comes up later. But and then also just to the south is the Philippines. So it's pretty subtropical climate. You have a lot of similarities in some Southeast Asian ingredients from that.
Well, so we are definitely going to talk through some of the specific recipes and obviously the photography in the book, kind of critical to any cookbook. When in the second half of the show, we're going to be joined by your photographer, Pete Lee. But before we get there, I want to kind of continue a little bit on this discussion of the personal narrative. So your mother is Taiwanese?
Yeah.
But your dad is not. How did they connect?
He majored in Asian studies. You know, he's a white WASP American and you know, decided to take on Asian languages at Cornell, and he was just like took some random job opportunity that happened to be in Taipei at an import export company, and my mom was working there too.
So they met and fell in love and came back to the States.
Yes.
Awesome. So when you were growing up in like your household, you know, did you guys identify as Taiwanese American, or how did you kind of understand that as a kid?
It was very confusing as a kid, actually, because, you know, in my mom's generation and a lot of people of her generation, she would kind of simplify and just say, you know, we're Chinese, you know, that's. And that's very true to an extent. Like, her parents were from mainland China, so... But then I knew, you know, she grew up in Taiwan. I knew my grandparents were living in Taiwan. There's this other place called Taiwan. But when it came down to food, we would just call it Chinese food. But we definitely had a sense of Taiwan, and, you know, we went there when I was a little kid. Yeah. And in holidays and, like, culture, there was definitely, like, a presence throughout my childhood.
I love that you included some childhood photos in the book. That was a treat. Well, tell me about Gong Gong and Popo.
Yeah. They were part of a mass immigrant arrival in Taiwan in 1948. They both went there independently as young people to Taiwan, as like in their young 20s, from Hunan province. That's where they're from. And they basically were like very, very righteous about the, you know, the times right then. It was like China's civil war. They were siding up with Chiang Kai-shek's Republic of China army, and who were fighting against the communists. Communists eventually won. But in that time period, the Republic of China decided to regroup and center its party on Taiwan. So they went and followed because they were wary of communist regime.
So those are your grandparents. And then, so one of the other scenes from the book, you're kind of, I think you're describing like a fish head or being at a fish market as like a young...
Oh, that's actually Joy Wang who wrote the foreword.
Okay.
Yeah. Joy Wang, she's a fantastic writer and editor and radio programmer too. So when I heard on her, I was like listening one day to All Things Considered and she mentioned she was Taiwanese. And I like wrote to her right then. I was like, hey, I want to know more about your thoughts about Taiwanese food. I'm doing this project. So, and she was fantastic. She wrote. But the kind of like, you know, that kind of goes to say that like whenever I hear that somebody knows something about Taiwanese food, it's like, it's kind of hush hush. It's hard to tell. Like as I was saying, my mom would simplify and just call herself Chinese. So when I do hear people mention it, I want to meet them.
Call that out. Well,
yeah,
that was, I guess maybe that's where I like connecting them in my head is like also the, you know, the kind of blurbs on the back of the book you have Robert Sietsma from Eater kind of talking about Taiwanese being one of the great neglected regional cuisines of China. For just this reason, because Taiwanese restaurateurs are more likely to open a Cantonese or Szechuan-style restaurant. Here in New York, is there anywhere that you go out for Taiwanese food?
In Flushing, a few pockets here and there. You know, there's Eddie Huang's Bauhaus. It's an interesting perspective, isn't it? Robert Sietsma is one of the most knowledgeable in terms of ethnic cuisines in the city. So even he can't even, find these places. It's really interesting, and hopefully we'll see more exposure in the times to come.
Well, that was the other thing I think is so nice about your book is it's an entree point. It's not, the kind of expert level Taiwanese cooking.
Not the end all be all at all.
But really kind of giving people, and I think of a super warm way, like some spaces to enter and start thinking about Taiwanese cooking and what that means. And I love that you include the Taiwanese pantry section. That's always to me one of my favorite parts of cookbooks is, what do I really need to kind of have on hand so that I don't get mid recipe or mid book and then I'm like, shit, I don't have XYZ. But can you take us through some of those pantry items?
Sure.
What do you see as kind of the quintessential kind of touchstones for a beginning, aspiring Taiwanese chef?
Sure. Well, first of all, I just want to caveat that by saying it's okay if you don't have everything, you can substitute and hopefully there's suggestions for that. And also compared to some cuisines, I think that Taiwanese has relatively little crazy ingredients that you can't find too many places. But that said, I think soy sauce is definitely one of them. Rice wine is really used heavily in cooking for stewing, for braising, for making sauces. So rice wine, don't be confused by rice vinegar. It's not the same thing. And fresh, colorful small chili peppers are used a lot, and as a garnish, but also to just kind of toss into a braise or something like that. Ginger, garlic, cilantro.
Yeah, stuff I might probably have anyway.
Stuff you know. Yeah.
Can I ask the rice wine, because I have some in my fridge right now, but I was thinking today, I was actually looking at it, I'm like, is it bad? How long can I keep it in my... Is it like a vinegar where I can keep it? I mean, I know it's not because it's a wine, but is there a shelf stability thing there?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you see aged wines all over the place, so yeah.
Okay.
The longer the merrier.
I don't have to worry about
no.
it.
No. It's like sake, you know?
Cool.
So you can also use sake, which is rice wine, too.
So you're putting one thing in, one thing out. Awesome. So one of the other things that I would love to kind of chat about before we get Pete Lee on the line is you do touch a little bit on the agriculture of Taiwan. And one of the things that I was surprised to read was you had included a stat that the Taiwanese government had committed to increasing organic vegetable production by this was in 2013. They committed to increasing it threefold. And you mentioned throughout the book kind of a growing awareness around organic standards and GMOs and what's the landscape
Non-GMO.
There?
It is definitely, I noticed that there was a conspicuous sort of green movement in Taiwan, which was very exciting. Taiwan is, they're very proud of their Taiwanese made food products. And, being so close to the Republic of China, being so close to the People's Republic of China, they're wary of the lack of health regulations over there. Unfortunately, we have seen in the last year or two some health scares in Taiwan of irresponsible producers, particularly in cooking oil. But that said, I mean, this is all, reason for why there is this growing movement of folks that want to see that labeling that says, made in Taiwan, organic, non-GMO. And I see that a lot on labels now for sauces and whatnot.
So there is it's interesting because I know that's something that comes up in conversation here in the States. You hear it in broad strokes XYZ thing has been contaminated that was produced in China and now it's coming to America and we have to be scared and questioning. But that's a thing that
they've been aware of this for a lot longer than us, right? So when you're closer to this stuff, you tend to be more protective.
One of the other categories of the books you were talking about, night markets. Mm. Can you describe what the night market is and kind of give us a vibe of what we might find there if we were to take a visit?
It's kind of like the biggest food festival, but it takes place at night. And not only is there food, but there's like clothing vendors, all kinds of like vendors, sometimes electronics. I've seen pet vendors, like all kinds. But, you know, people go there to taste all these interesting, cool street food. So it's a lot of fun. It happens every night, too, which is unlike, you know, a carnival or, you know, one night only type of event. So people go there. And it's like, you know, it's like the mall, you know, it's like where you go to hang out and socialize, just to shop or sort of stroll around, eat a little bit.
Have snacks.
Yeah.
Do you, and I'm not sure if you know about this, but I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the types of food we would find in more urban parts of the country versus more rural parts of the country. Is there like a big shift between the two or difference or...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think actually it's more geographic too, because there's so many regional specialties throughout Taiwan, and hopefully they're kind of called out. And people in Taiwan travel to different cities to taste that regional specialty. So they're like, oh, you know, this famous dish from Jiayi is this chicken on rice thing, and I got to go there, and I got to eat that. You know, kind of like how we would go eat barbecue in Texas and so forth. But I think Taiwan has a lot of cities. I think it's rather evenly populated, so there's like a big city, like, you know, in every county. Rural food, you know, hopefully we captured some of the home cooking, and it tends to be more simple, you know, less snacky traditions.
Yeah, similar to here. I have to say, this book made for a really hard morning for me. I was going between this, and I'm also reading Michael Pollan's Cooked. And so I'm like going, I was like vacillating between Taiwanese food and like American barbecue history. And I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to have for lunch today. Life is so hard. Well, hang tight. We are going to move to a short station break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Kathy's photographer and collaborator on this project, Pete Lee. You are listening to Eat Your Words on the Heritage Radio Network. And we'll be right back.
You are listening to At Least I Got My Baby by Camelia Hartman on heritageradionetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Hello, this is Mark Ladner from Del Posto, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Ah, the dreamy Mark Ladner.
Oh, that's a sexy voice there.
I know. If you just tuned in, you're, of course, listening to Eat Your Words on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hosted by Aaron Fairbanks.
I know, guest hosting. shining a spotlight on Kathy Irwe and her new book, The Food of Taiwan. And we're joined in the second half of the show by Pete Lee, who is a San Francisco-based photographer and videographer. Pete, thanks for taking some time to chat with us.
Oh, hi. Hey, how are you guys?
Good. We're doing good. So how did you and Kathy end up collaborating on this project?
Do you want me?
We met like 15 years ago in college when
we were the only Taiwanese people.
That we're going to be doing this, you know, all these years later. And I think it was around 2011, like late 2011, when Kathy told me that she is working on this book and wanted to do some kind of research. And I just begged her to take me along to Taiwan, and she did. And we started collaborating, and that was a really fun trip. I think we traveled the island for, I think, close to a month, and we just ate everything.
Yeah.
Oh, that's rad. So, Pete, your background is not in food or food work. So I'm wondering, like, when you were kind of on the trip with Kathy, you know, what did you feel like was going to be kind of the important stuff to capture to really share some of the spirit of Taiwan with the readers of the book?
I don't know. For me, I felt like... I have certain opinions about Taiwanese food and how it should be, but really more of it was about capturing like the excitement of a people in mm-hmm. Taiwan and what they feel is important and what they feel like they should share, as opposed to filter through my own, you know, nostalgia for Taiwanese food or my own experience growing up over there. So that really was more of, you know, what... I don't know, I felt like I was trying to relay, or we're trying to relay. Like, when we were there, people were so excited to share the food with us. And they were, you know, whether they just be, you know, owners of a restaurant or coffee shops, or just people we meet in the streets, or people we became friends with. You know, everybody has a secret thing. Everybody has a take on what Taiwanese food is or should be. And... So, you know, we just, I just kind of like beautifully photographed whatever it is that I felt like that they were trying to relate to us.
And, you know, Pete is really good at like finding those stories and being inspired in the moment by these people. And, you know, I would come up with like lists. I'm like, Pete, you have to shoot this. You have to shoot an Aboriginal. You need to shoot. And meanwhile, Pete's like running across the street after this man who's dressed like an accidental Asian hipster. And I'm like, that's not on the list. That old man is not.
It's kind of like speaking to some of that creative tension that can be fun when you have someone who is like myself, maybe a touch more detail oriented versus being like open to absorbing kind of like the vibe of what's around you. I would love for each of you, and maybe starting with you, Kathy, to talk a little bit about, you know, what in your experience, like Taiwanese people were like when it came to food, like what that vibe is.
Well, they are obsessed with food. that's like main point. In so many ways, I mean, I think that Taiwanese food obsessions, there is no limitations to it. They're really interested in trying foreign foods and trying all the specialties from throughout Taiwan, as well as East Asia in general too.
Kind of open. How about you, Pete?
What do you think?
I feel like Taiwanese people, by and large, I think the culture encourages you to be very humble and encourages you to be low, you know, kind of low key. But when it comes to food, you can tell that they take enormous pride. And I don't know. I link it to how like people of New Orleans talk about their music. Mm-hmm. They not only want you to know about the food that they love. They're also aware that, you know, there is food that they have that is internationally popular, and they want you to try the real version, and they want you to see how, you know, how far their boba game has stepped up, while the rest of the world is catching up and that kind of thing.
Well, I do want to talk about a couple of recipes that jumped out, or kind of items that jumped out to me in particular. Uh-oh. In the book, starting with meatball mochi. Because I was like, wait, what? Meatball mochi? I'm like, what's happening? Sweet, savory, meat, rice? Okay.
So this dish's name translates to meatball. Pete, do you want to add anything else on it? I mean, bawan. It's,
yeah.
You see meatball translated.
It really just means meatball or some kind of round.
Right. So I thought that wasn't quite, you know, capturing the whole of this dish, because it's, yes, it has meat, but it on the outside, it's this, like, sort of clear, like, kind of chewy starch. So it's kind of like a dumpling, but it's not like a wheat skin. It's like this glutinous rice starch skin. So it's kind of similar to mochi. So I called it meatball mochi.
Oh, man, it sounds like so delicious. I'm like, you're kind of like married like two of my favorite kind of flavors and textures. Well, the other thing I feel like I see around and a little bit here in New York, sometimes at markets, is bitter melon. And I'm never like, I always want to get it, but then I'm just like, what do I do? So what do we do with bitter melon?
Kugwa, it is so bitter. One great way to do it, if you're scared of how sharply bitter it is, because it is to steam it first and then stuff it with meat. There's a recipe for it, so it's stuffed bitter melon. So I think that softens the flavor and also coddles it with some richness to help cut that. Pete, any other suggestions you have?
Yeah, I just like it. I mean, I guess it really depends on the type of bitter melon that you pick out. But, you know, I like the fresher ones, the green ones.
The green.
And,
the light green.
And it's always fun for me to just, like, you treat it like coffee. Like, mm-hmm. There is bitterness, but, you know, you don't mask it. You just try to bring out, you know, other aspects of a melon. And I've eaten it almost like a cucumber salad. So it's bitter melon with honey.
Okay.
And I really love that. And or you can just stir fry with some beef. That's always a popular, you know, you can find that in like little Chinatown eateries and things like that. I don't know. Yeah.
So you can just kind of, just as far as like preparation techniques, you can eat it raw, you can steam it, you can stir fry it, you can cook it. So kind
you
of.
You can juice it.
You can juice it. So don't be, just pick one up and like play around.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Well, it's got that sponge in the middle that you absolutely shouldn't eat. That is the bitter
the
part.
Seeds.
And the outer part, the rind is you know, it kind of resembles watermelon rind to me, where, you know, it's got this it's got this little bit of sweetness to it, and I think that's why we're obsessed with it.
Yeah. The good part.
One of the other kind of components in the book, And I don't know if I'm saying this right, but it was just the letter Q.
QQ.
QQ. What is QQ?
Oh, it's a word to describe a coveted texture that you see in meatballs, in fish balls, in bawan skin, I think. What else? In tapioca pearls, I think that would be described as Q. Some noodles are a little bouncy and springy, so I think Pete, you know, help me explain this, because, you know, it's not too, you know, it's different from Western preferences. So it's not like tender, but it's like it has some bite.
Right.
I think springy is a good word. I've heard a TV chef on Taiwan explain it as bouncing off your teeth.
Bouncing off your teeth.
Okay. Okay, so it's like if I wanted to, like, you know, if you like invite me over to your grandma's house and I wanted to really compliment her, mm-hmm. I would say like, oh, this is very cute. Is that right?
If it was,
if it was, yeah. If it was, if it wasn't, then they should be like, okay, nice try. But
well, cute is also something that is found more in fast food and you know, in
processed
street food.
Things.
I don't think that's a very grandma. I think the grandmas of Taiwan don't go for that kind of stuff.
Mm. All right, good. Well, I just want to know, in general, whenever I'm traveling in any part of the world, I basically want to know how to say thank you to grandma. So I feel like that's like just a good rule of thumb as a traveler.
You say, how chi.
Yeah, that's a great skill.
Just one other kind of recipe that, it's a very simple recipe that I want to kind of shout out is the pickled mustard greens, because I just think it's like such a simple preparation, and I feel like here in New York we're seeing more and more varieties of greens showing up at the summer markets, and I am a condiment girl, like anytime I can have a little something extra, like funky or spicy or sour, to add to almost any dish, to me it seems like a really nice way to add like a splash of Taiwanese into whatever I happen to be cooking.
Make a jar of this. I mean, it's taking one type of mustard greens, which is like has a more kind of thick, fibrous, white part, but it has in the mustard green family, and just by simply lacto fermenting it, which is one variety of pickles that is used in sauerkraut and kimchi, you produce this wonderful, funky, sour, tangy flavor that combined with just the mustard green's natural kind of pepperiness, it's really wonderful.
Well, we are just about out of time, but before we head out, Kathy, what is the best way for folks to get the book, to follow you on tour, to kind of hear more about what's up?
All right, so we're doing a dinner in March 29th at Jimmy's in New York City. We're also doing a dinner in San Fran at Namu on April 6th.
Awesome.
That said, you can also tune in to WNYC's The Green Space to see a little live discussion on this Tuesday night.
Radio on radio.
I know.
That's awesome. Pete, Kathy, thank you so much for joining us today. Kathy, thank you for letting me co-host. It's been a real treat to get a chance to interview
you. Thanks for joining,
Pete.
Thank
you. This is a lot of fun.
So once again, the book is The Food of Taiwan by your regular Eat Your Words host, Kathy Irway. Go to your great local independent cookbook seller and pick up your copy. It's going to be a ton of fun. I know I've definitely enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another episode of Eat Your Words. We're going to take you out. This program, like all 39 of our weekly shows, is available for free. You can find out more by visiting our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you believe in our work, please become a member. Click that donate tab. We'll send you some swag, and you'll just feel proud and like better about yourself in general as a human. Thanks again for listening, and stay tuned in.
See ya.
The theme song for Eat Your Words is Lovin' Like This by the California Honey Drops.
The way you took it so slow. And
thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.